The reading this morning is from Galatians 4, verses 4 and 5. Galatians 4, 4 and 5. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons.
It's good to see each of you here this morning. We certainly have prayers with Tim as he enjoys a family reunion. Pray that that will go well and he'll be back with us soon. This morning, we're going to look at a fairly familiar character. Even the children here probably recognize this picture of a young man getting a coat of many colors. It's part of the Old Testament. And we study the Old Testament because really it is the foundation for what we have in Christianity. If we think about it, we are still under Christianity to keep 9 of what we call the 10 commandments under the law. Only we worship on the first day of the week and don't have all the restrictions of the Sabbath day. But also, the Old Testament is filled with examples for us. Paul said the things that were written before time, referring to the Hebrew Bible at that time, what we call the Old Testament, was there for our learning. We can study these people and learn from them. And the Bible is very real. We learn from their good points, we learn from their mistakes and the evil that was in their lives as well. And as we look at these people, we'll see that we haven't really changed. You look at Adam and Eve, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life. Those things still beset people today. Lifestyles may have changed. We have different careers. Certainly our dress is the same, is different than it was then. But our thoughts, our desires, our temptations, no. They haven't changed at all. So I want us to look this morning at Joseph. Get it up here in a minute. Well, there is something. There we go. Joseph is probably the best known of the 12 sons of Jacob. And yet, he was not the oldest. That was Reuben. He didn't have the most well-known tribe, even though there were 2 tribes to each of his sons. That was Judah. And yet, we find in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, his entire life is told to us, and we can learn from that life. Life for Joseph was not always easy. He started off as the favorite son. After all, he was the oldest son of the 2 sons of Jacob's favorite wife, the one he really wanted more than anything else. Yet, it was not easy all of his life. And particularly when he was in Egypt, which I want us to focus on this morning, he faced temptations. And as we look at just 3 of these temptations, and we look at ourselves, we're finding that we will face the same temptations, or are facing, or have faced, in our lives. And we want to compare Joseph's reaction with the reaction that we have today. First of all, if you look at Genesis 39, and we won't read all these verses, but I encourage you in your daily Bible reading to read the life of Joseph. It's fascinating. It's interesting. That there was physical temptation that came on Joseph. If you remember, he was sold to a caravan. They carried him to Egypt. He was then sold as a slave in Egypt. He was sold to a man called Potiphar, a very rich, a very wealthy man. And he did a good job for that master. He was, as we might say today, making the best of what could have been a very bad situation for him. In the 39th chapter, verse 6, of Potiphar it says, "So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. Because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate." Potiphar said, "I trust you, Joseph." He didn't do that automatically. Here was an Egyptian power man, and here was this little guy from Canaan, a young man, but he showed to be trustworthy. And so Potiphar said, "You're in charge of everything." And Potiphar had nothing to worry about, it says, except his own food. Joseph was doing well, even though he was a slave. But here the fly in the ointment. The second part of verse 6 and in verse 7 it says, "So Joseph was handsome in form." He was a good-looking young man. "And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, 'Lie with me.'" Now, she wanted to have physical relations with Joseph. He was a young, handsome man. He was from a different country. Yeah, he was attractive to her. Now, from extra-biblical sources, we learn, as said, not inspired, outside the Bible, that this was probably what we call today a May-December relationship. Potiphar was older. She was young and beautiful. He married her because she was young and beautiful. She married him because he was rich and powerful. And probably, being as high as he is, and Denny told me about a spider, and it was back again. When I preached in the country years ago in Middle Tennessee, I said two things can't occupy the pulpit: a wasp and me. Spiders are now included in that, but he didn't look too dangerous, I don't think. There he is on the floor. We'll give him grace and let him crawl off. But she was used to getting anything she wanted from her rich and powerful husband. And here was her rich and powerful husband's slave. She says, "Okay, I like him. He looks good. I'll just have him." So now we have decision time for Joseph. The temptation of the physical. And people today are still tempted by the physical, whether it be physical relationships, whether it be food, whether it be gambling, whatever it is, the physical still tempts man, and Satan knows that. What was Joseph's reaction? Well, he could have tried to rationalize the situation in one of several ways. One, nobody knows I'm here. Oh, his brothers knew that they had sold him off to a caravan. His father thought he was dead, killed by an animal. Here he is way off, because they had to walk or ride camels at that time, down in Egypt. Nobody will know. Nobody will find out. Nobody knows who this Joseph is. Can we be guilty today because we are around no one who knows us? No one who might know that we are a Christian, to act differently, to try to fit in with the world, to go along with things? Do we think that Joseph had left God back in the land of Canaan? Do we think that we leave God when we leave Johnson City, or even worse than that, leave this building where Christians come together and worship? Joseph could have said, nobody knows me, so I'll just go ahead and sin. The other way he could rationalize it was say, hey, I've got a good situation here. I'm slave to a powerful man who trusts me, who's given me all sorts of latitude. Yeah. I don't want to rock the boat here. Yeah. Things are good. This could happen. Slave's life could change quickly. Look at Onesimus in the New Testament. Paul wrote to Philemon because at that time, under Roman law, if a slave ran away, he could be put to death. Joseph could have refused and been put to death because he refused the physical temptation of Potiphar's wife. He could have basically used what modern-day people call situation ethics. The situation demands that I sin. The situation demands that I go along with what everybody else is doing. We don't know, but you wonder if Potiphar's wife, if Joseph was the first person that she had tempted in this way. He could have also said, well, you know, one sin isn't so bad. Yeah, it's just one sin. I could do worse. And many people do worse, after all. I don't know how they do in high school now, but certainly those that are in college with us today understand the idea of the curve. Yeah. In ways, it doesn't really matter what you score, as long as you score better than most of the people. There's an old story about two people that were being chased by the bear. And one said to the other, I hope we can be faster than the bear. And the other one said, I only need to be faster than you are. Yeah, it's grading by the curve. God does not grade by the curve. We do not stand before God and say, hey, I'm better than a lot of people I know, even though I yield to sin when it is best for me to do so. And then finally, he could have said, well, you know, if God really cared about me, I wouldn't be here in Egypt in the first place. He would have protected me from my brothers. He would have made those of the other 11 that had more remorse stopped the people. So if he really cared, I wouldn't be in this situation. So I'll just go along with the temptation because God doesn't care about me. He can, in essence, blame it on God, blame it on Potiphar's wife, and he has no responsibility. Doesn't that sound like Adam? God, the woman you gave me. First of all, it's Eve's fault, and it's your fault because you gave me Eve. So it doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm just a poor victim. That didn't cut it with God then. It doesn't cut it with God today. We are responsible for our actions. And sometimes, in fact, many times, being a Christian means we take the harder road now. So Joseph could have tried to rationalize things in many ways. But no, as we continue in this story of Joseph, we find that he literally ran away from Potiphar's wife. He didn't walk away. He didn't say, now wait, let's think about it. What about tomorrow? We'll see about tomorrow. No, he ran away. Why did he run away? Well, for one thing, his faith was in God, and he realized that God was everywhere. We may use the term omnipresent today, a big fancy word that simply means God is everywhere. God is here with us. But if we go to Atlanta or New York or the other side of the world, God is with us. And he's seeing what we do, and he knows what we do. Secondly, Joseph ran because he has standards that are beyond the situation. We will be tempted by people who want to change the rules, who want to break them or to bend them for their own purposes. And we'll be tempted to say, well, everybody's doing it. And what parent hadn't heard that? But mom, dad, everybody's doing this. Joseph had standards that were beyond people that were around him. Furthermore, he had respect for God and for other people. Look at verse 8. He refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Every sin we have has a victim. Sometimes there are many victims. Sometimes we sin against a person. You would say, well, they're the victim. But regardless, every sin is against God because we're going against God's will. Joseph had respect for God. He had respect for Potiphar, even though Potiphar was the master. We need to remember, as it says in verses 21 and 23 of this chapter, the world tends to persecute good. Christ said, you know, the world will hate you. Why? Because you are a living representation, or should be, and we need to strive to be that, of the conscience that they have left. And they don't like it. No one likes to be told they're wrong, but we need it. The problem is, instead of taking the correction, we want to blame somebody else or simply get mad. And so Joseph ran. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 17 and 18 we'll read. "But he is joined to the Lord, becomes one spirit with him. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside his body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you are bought with a price. So glorify God in your body." Paul doesn't say, be around sin. See how close you can get to sinning and still step away. No, he says, flee from sin. Run from it. If someone told you that there was a fire somewhere in this building, unless you're a trained firefighter, you're going to get out and run. You're going to say, oh, let's go see it. Let's see how close I can get to it without getting burned. No, you run from it. That's common sense. Paul is saying, do what Joseph did, which is simply common sense. Run from sin. Don't see how close you can get to it. Don't flirt with it. Don't think it's probably okay or I can handle this. No, run from it. Secondly, Joseph was tempted by adversity. He did what was right, and now God's going to immediately bless him, right? He was thrown into prison for doing what's right. And at this point, he could begin to question both himself and God. He could have said, well, I'd been better off if I just sinned. Sounds sort of like the children of Israel when they were wandering in the wilderness, and they said, we'd been better off to go back in Egypt and be slaves again. How ridiculous. But people can do that under adverse situation. I'd just been better off if I'd gone ahead and sinned and worried about that. He could have said, well, now I know for sure God has forgotten me. Not only have I had everything messed up, I had to be a slave, and then that was messed up, and now I'm in prison, and that's even worse. I don't know what's going to happen to me. So God has forgotten me. He could have thought back to his earlier days and go, what about all those dreams? God sent these dreams to me, and now they're not going to come to be. What's wrong? There could have been doubt in his mind that came about as a result of that adversity. Not only doubt in himself, but more vitally, doubt in God. We simply cannot doubt God because we live in a sinful world, and that sin is going to have its effect on good people in the world. Instead of doing all these things, or any of them, Joseph helped others while he was in prison. And yet, even then, it was 2 long years. If you've ever been confined or around people who are confined, you might look at your total life and say, oh, well, what's 2 years? Well, maybe if you're getting a degree in college or some training for a better job, 2 years, you can say that's not going to be too long. But being confined in a prison, 2 years is a long time. But finally, he was remembered, brought before Pharaoh, and you know the story of the dreams that Pharaoh had and how Joseph interpreted those dreams, and everything worked out during the time in Egypt. Joseph had trusted God through this adversity, through betrayal by his brothers, through slavery, through temptations of various kinds, through prison, and now finally to deliverance. 2 things we need to take away from this so far. 1, the Christian life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. We have to be in Christian life living for the long term. There will be temptations. There will be times we're not tempted. There will be things we're tempted really a great deal about. And we need to remind ourselves of God's love. We also need to remind ourselves that if we're non-repentant, that sin will go punished without the blood of Christ to cover that sin. We need to keep going. And we're not to question God, but to wait on Him. We're not told the exact number of days. We know it was at least 2 years in prison, how much longer that he was a slave before everything started unraveling with Potiphar's wife. But it was some time that passed. We read earlier, and I want you to look at again, Galatians 4:4-5. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive adoption as sons. The promise that was a bit foreshadowed with Adam and Eve, that was clearly given to Abraham, it was many years before finally the Messiah, Jesus Christ, came to pay the ultimate price for all the sin for those who will accept him. The key is to wait on God in his time, because he is faithful in that time. Finally, Joseph was tempted by prosperity. Beginning in chapter 41, we have the story, and in the latter part of the chapter, how Joseph rose to power. He rapidly, after the dreams and after the fulfillment of those dreams, became the second in power to Pharaoh. Now, Egypt was the most powerful country in the world at this time. He had wealth, he had power. Anything that wasn't delegated to him, all he had to do was go to Pharaoh, and he would be granted that. If you remember the movie Ten Commandments, which was first made in the 50s, Yul Brynner playing Pharaoh, and he would slap his chest and he said, "So let it be written, so let it be done." Pharaoh was powerful, and Joseph was second only to Pharaoh in this powerful country. And yet, with the time that had passed, he was still a young man. Yeah. It could, as the good old expression says, could have gone to his head. "Hey, look, I'm Joseph. Boy, Potiphar's wife or Potiphar wouldn't mess with me now. They wouldn't dare throw me in prison now. They would simply bow to me." He saw the fulfillment of those brothers who had betrayed him coming down and bowing before him and begging him for enough bread, enough grain to stay alive till the famine was over. And yet, he could have said, "I don't need God now. I can do this myself. I can handle this. I don't need God." Those of you, and probably most of us here, can remember the morning of 9/11, what it was like, but also remember that day the church buildings were full. There were prayers. "God Bless America" was being sung everywhere. Millions at that point looked to God for help. If we went back another generation, I'm sure we'd find the same thing happening after Pearl Harbor. But yet, tragically, after a while, the church buildings weren't as full anymore. People went back to their everyday lives, and they gradually pushed God more in the background. "God, we need you right now. We've got to..." "Okay, things are looking better now, God. You step out of my way. You step back in my life." Joseph could have forgotten God. But missing in Joseph is revenge. Revenge against his brothers. Revenge against Potiphar. Revenge against Potiphar's wife. But nowhere was there that. Joseph had truly forgiven the others. He looked back over his life, and he saw that there was a plan in his life, a plan that God had for him, that he might use the power that God had given him for good. And he never forgot that that power came from God. It was not through him and through his own strength. It was through God. And God blessed him. Genesis, the 50th chapter, verses 22 through 26, it says, "So Joseph remained in Egypt, he and his father's house. Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. Children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to a land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob.' So Joseph made his sons of Israel swear, saying, 'God will surely visit you and will carry, and you will carry up my bones from here.' So Joseph died being 110 years old, and he was embalmed, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. He was made a mummy, and that mummy was carried to the promised land. He trusted in God. He did not push God into the back. We need to today to avoid slipping into the feeling that we don't need God. We have careers, we may have good jobs, and from these we can get the material things that we might need and a lot of things we don't need. You know, you go to the grocery store and you're often tempted to say when someone says, "Did you find everything you need?" "Yeah, and a few things we didn't know we need when we came in." Yeah, we have blessings that are material. We can be guilty of saying, "Look what I've done. Look at how much money I've made. Look at all the things that I have gotten." And not thank God for the blessings that we have each day of our lives through him. We can think of ourselves as strong, that we don't need God because we have money, we have power, we have military might. In short, we can put God into a file, into a cabinet, and go, "Okay, God is there in drawer 3, about halfway back, and if I need him, I'll pull him out. But otherwise, I don't want him, his commands, his will for us, the manner of life that he said we are to have, I don't want that interfering with what I want to do because I've got things good." And if we do not think that God sees us, if we do not think that he knows that we have that in our heart, then we are terribly, terribly wrong in that. Joseph was tempted. Tempted in these ways that we've looked at today. The question that comes is, what tempts you? Are you tempted more by the physical, the things that satisfy the desires of the flesh? Are you tempted by going through hard times and not wanting to trust that God is still there with you, to blame God for everything that's bad that happens in the world, when we're told clearly by James that everything that's good and perfect is from God, the sin is the result of the devil. This same devil that uses the same temptations that Joseph faced to us today. I've heard this saying in football, run the same play till they stop it. Meaning, if this play works, keep on running it. Well, the devil is using the same things that he used from Adam and Eve forward to today. Why? Because he deceives people and they follow it. What is tempting you? Is it pushing God into the background? The question is, what are you doing about these temptations? How are you responding? Are you running from them? Are you, with God's power, standing up when you have to these things? Or are you saying the situation means I have to sin now. I have to go along for whatever reason you might come up with. If that's the case, we need to learn from Joseph, from the ways that he faced temptation, and be willing to stand up to the devil. Stand up to the temptation that is present in our lives each day. Change our lives and come to God. The land that we have promised is far greater and far more eternal than the land the children of Israel was promised. We can get it by responding to Christ, to his call, to accept him, and have your sins cleansed, and have God there with you fighting the temptation. Will you make that decision as we stand and sing?